It is difficult to release the babies of thy hand.
A shadow moveth, creeping like the stretching serpent coils. It grows, swells out, and disappears in darkness. It is the shadow of thyself outside the path cast on the darkness of thy sins. Yea, Lord, I see the path, its foot in mire, its summit lost in glorious light nirvanic. And now I see the ever-narrowing portals on the hard and thorny way to Jnana. Thou seest well, Lanu, these portals lead the aspirant across the waters on to the other shore. Each portal hath a golden key that openeth its gate, and these keys are 1. Dana, the key of charity and love immortal. 2. Shila, the key of harmony in word and act, the key that counterbalances the cause and effect and leaves no further room for karmic action. 3. Shanti, patience sweet that naught can ruffle. 4. Viraga, indifference to pleasure and to pain, illusion conquered, truth alone perceived. 5. Virya, the dauntless energy that fights its way to the supernal truth out of the mire of life's terrestrial. 6. Dhyana, whose golden gate once opened leads the Narjol towards the realm of Sat Eternal and its ceaseless contemplation. 7. Prajna, the key to which makes of a man a god, creating him a bodhisattva, son of the jnanis. Such to the portals are the golden keys. Before thou canst approach the last, O weaver of thy freedom, thou hast to master these paramitas of perfection. The virtues transcendental 6 and 10 in number along the weary path. Cultivation of the soul, that is the subject that we are considering. The question naturally arises, what is a soul? Why should it be cultivated? And if it has to be cultivated, how is it to be done? Many religionists speak of the possibility of losing one's soul, of having a soul, man having a soul, and the necessity of taking care of the soul. This implies as if we are different from the soul and it is in our possession and it has to be taken care of, failing which there is a possibility of losing it. But simply put, what the ancient science says is, you are the soul. Epictetus puts this very nicely. He says, you are a soul carrying a corpse. We think we are the body having a soul, but it's the opposite. You are the soul, you are a soul carrying a corpse. The body is a corpse. So we are that which moves from life to life, periodically interrupted by rest, which we call death. But our life is eternal. Cyclically coming back to earth, gaining experience, assimilating it, coming back again. The Roman king philosopher Marcus Aurelius gives a very good definition of what is a soul and puts in perspective what is our identity and what is our relationship with the mind, the brain, the body. He says this, I quote, remember that what pulls the strings is that part of us hidden inside. That is the power to act. That is the principle of life. That, one could say, is the man himself. So, never give any equal thought to the vessel which contains it or the organs built round it. These are an instrument like an axe differing only in their attachment to the body. There is no more use in these parts without the agency which starts or stops them than in the shuttle without the weaver, the pen without the writer, the whip without the driver. So here, the perspective of what we are in our real identity and a relationship with the body and the organs is very poetically, very beautifully given by Marcus Aurelius. And this is the idea which we need to grasp to understand what is cultivation of the soul. So the primary job then is to get the knowledge of what is our real nature. If we are the soul, then what is our nature? Because cultivation would mean then nurturing that nature and discouraging and diminishing all other characteristics and qualities and building our character such that it is a perfect reflection of our real nature, the nature of the soul. That would be cultivation of the soul. So before we proceed on a journey, what do? We find what are the dangers, what are the pitfalls. We know about the journey that we are undertaking. Before getting into a war, what does a good warrior do? He knows about his enemies, their strengths, their weaknesses, their strategies, and comes up with his strategies and uses his strengths to overcome the enemy. Similarly, in this journey of life or in this struggle against what is an obstacle to the soul, we need to know what is that obstacle, what is the enemy, which Krishna very clearly in the most simple words says in the Bhagavad Gita that self is the enemy of the self, as also self is its own friend. One who is not self-conquered, self becomes enemy. One who is self-conquered, self is a friend. So there is this is very nicely illustrated in a story of a Sufi sheikh or a Sufi saint called Abu Bakr al-Shibli of 11th century. It so happened that he was asked, Abu, who was your first guide in this path of knowledge? Abu says that my first guide was a dog. As if, what is this? How do you say that? What do you mean? So he goes on to explain that this dog which was sitting at the edge of the water, dying with thirst, but not ready to drink water, because the moment it would come to the water, it would see its reflection and think that there is another dog, fearful dog, and then run away. It would again come back, not, you know, ready to tolerate the thirst, again see its reflection, think that there is a dog, and run away. Finally, it is not able to tolerate, and then jumps into the water and drinks water and survives. When it jumps into the water, Abu says, it realized that there is no other self. So it is this reflection of oneself which was the greatest obstacle for it to drink the waters of life. So this is what the teachers say, that the greatest obstacle for cultivation of the soul or gaining all the divine virtues which are inherent in us is the reflected self. In this condition, desires play a very important role. The cultivation of the soul, desires play a very important role. Because we grow in the likeness of our desires. To know what is our desire, we just need to ask the question, what do we spend our time on? During the day, what is it that we spend our time on? That shows where our heart lies. That shows where our desires lie. We may cheat ourselves thinking that I have very high desires. My aspirations are very high. But at the end of the day, if you look back and see where you have spent your time, what you have spent your time doing, that shows where your desires lie. And a general condition of all of us is most of our time, if not all, which is also true in many cases, goes in comfort of the body, luxury of the body, pleasures of the body. Whatever the body desires, we readily make it available for it. So Socrates says very humorously in one of the Platonic dialogues that the body leaves no time for philosophy, as in it consumes our complete time and ensures that it is well fed, put in a comfortable position, luxuriously. And if that is the case, then our desires lie there. And when it is not the comforts of the body, what occupies our attention is the pleasures of the mind, entertainment of the mind. Television, movies, or reading this, that, and the other thing, or any other entertainment that occupies our time. So, these pleasures and the earthly enjoyments is something that hinders the cultivation of the soul. That is what the teachers say. This is the obstacle which stops, like the reflection stops the dog from jumping into the water and drinking and refreshing itself. Similarly, it is this reflected self full of desires and enjoyment, thirst for enjoyment. That is the obstacle. There is a story of Demeter in the Greek legend, which we are studying in Isis Unveiled. Demeter has lost her child. Her child Persephone is kidnapped by Hades. So Demeter is full of sorrow, wandering on the earth, searching for Persephone, a mother searching for a child. And it so happens that she meets some inhabitants of the earth. This Greek goddess Demeter meets inhabitants of the earth. And one of the inhabitants, Bobo, gives her a certain drink. And she drinks this drink given by Bobo, and for a moment she forgets all her sorrows. She is happy as if nothing has happened. But the real state is that she has still lost her child, hasn't found her child, she is actually suffering. But she deludes herself after drinking this drink prepared by the potion prepared by Bobo. She thinks that she is happy, she thinks that she is enjoying. Similar is the condition of all of us, where the Bobo which prepares this drink is the terrestrial existence. The Demeter is us wandering on this earth. And the pleasures which come out of it seem to give us enjoyment, but actually it is a suffering. Because it is misleading us, it is making us forget the real purpose for which we are here, misdirecting us. Therefore, in the yoga aphorisms, sage Patanjali describes ignorance as the mistaken notion that what is good is bad and what is bad is good. Ignorance is that. By masking our real nature as the soul itself. We begin to think that the enjoyments and the pleasures and the self-centeredness is happiness or leads to happiness, whereas it is actually bad which we are considering as good. And the real good, which is spiritual discipline and knowledge, appears very distasteful for us. So this has to be overcome. These desires have to be overcome. And this is the one of the primary things which has to be achieved in the science of cultivation of the soul. There is this other Egyptian Sufi called Dua Noam Al-Misri. He was traveling with his caravan in a place, and an intended disciple, an aspirant, comes to him and says, "I want nothing else in this life except to tread the path of truth." Al-Misri thinks for a while and says, "Yeah, you can accompany our caravan, but there are two things that you will have to accept and accomplish." He says those two things are, one is, you will not be permitted to do what you want to do. And secondly, you will be asked to do what you don't want to do. He says, because it is this wanting which is hiding you from the God. Hiding, in the Sufi terms, hiding the lover from the beloved. It is this wanting. So he says the whole path of treading, the whole process of treading the path of truth is removal of this wanting. So all these desires pertain to the impermanent part of us. Think about it. At the moment of death, would all these pleasures, desires, make any sense at all? It pertains to impermanent part, that which goes away at death, transient. Because it is tainted with matter, therefore it can never be permanent. It is not of our true nature, which is soul, spiritual, it's a part of spirit. The desires that we run after are not part of that, are not of that nature. Therefore, it never gives us happiness, satisfaction. Have you ever found acquiring something which you so strongly desired and it gave you complete happiness and forever? Nothing. You can never find anything which you sought after and found and it gave you happiness the way you thought it would give and forever. This is because we are of spiritual nature. We are of the nature of immortality, of eternity. And the things that we run after with mistaken notion is the things which are transient, which has a beginning, middle and an end. So, to reach the state of desirelessness is not easy. And it's not a single step process. Just like a seed, once it is sown into the soil, tomorrow morning you can't expect it to bear, give fruits. It's a long process. It has to go state by state. A child which is born, which is in infancy, cannot jump to adulthood. It has to pass through the process of youth, attain adulthood, and then attain old age. Similarly, from our state from in which we all are, we cannot at once reach desirelessness. What is necessary is first to cultivate higher desires, to cultivate desires for better things, to cultivate desires for things which are akin to our true nature, which is spiritual. to more and more detach ourselves from desires which are of impermanent nature, desires for impermanent objects and things. If you take the example or the analogy of cultivation, it matches so well with the process of spiritual cultivation. Cultivation of the field, very good analogy to understand the processes required to cultivate the soul in our mind. What is the first thing necessary for cultivation? Soil. Soil represents mind. Just to take an analogy, just to take an example, the soil of the mind, we all have that. The piece of land that we have is the soil of the mind. And the present state generally is such that it is full of weeds, useless plants, poisonous plants, boulders, infested with various insects and so on. That is the condition. And not completely so, there come good plants here and there, useful fruit bearing trees here and there. That is the general condition. So all these weeds and poisonous plants, the boulders, all the obstacles represent our self-centeredness, selfishness, desires, hatred, jealousy, all the negative emotions we have planted it. Why is it so? Why are we in this condition? Because in the previous season we planted those seeds. Therefore we are seeing those plants. If we had planted better seeds, we would be seeing better plants in this season. And they would have given their seeds, which you could have again sown, to gather richer harvest. But unfortunately, as is the case, we have sown a lot of weeds, useless stuff, or positively harmful stuff. So this is the condition. Now what do we do? How do we begin? How should we deviate? How do we know what is a good plant, what is useful, what is poisonous? What are the seeds that we should plant? What are the seeds that we should sow? How should we cultivate? What is the process of cultivation? What is necessary? Randomly doing something is disastrous usually. That is like acting without knowledge. Or merely emotion and expectation to cultivate alone without doing anything is again useless. This is merely devotion. First thing that would be necessary then is ask those who have done this before. Who are those who have cultivated this before, who have reaped the harvest, golden harvest? What is the work that they have done? Study their work, study their lives. So knowledge is the first step. In the cultivation of soul, knowledge is the first step. Randomly doing something is taking the path of action without knowledge. Merely desiring it is desiring that I want a good field. I won't do anything. I will merely desire, sit there in a corner and desire. Merely aspiring to do so without taking the right steps in the right direction is again useless. First step is know what should be done. And the best guides are master cultivators. They have mastered the art of cultivation, reap the harvest, and they are the adepts. First is to consult them. And what they say is, these master cultivators say is, you cannot take the seeds and plant it in this mess that we have created. First still you need to prepare the soil, prepare your mind. No teacher can lift you into the heights of knowledge. You need to prepare yourself so that the right seeds can be planted, can be sown. There are various kinds of soils that we see. Some are harsh and dry. Unkind minds. Very unkind, very self-centered, arid. Some are overly humid. Too much self-pity, emotionalism, feeling of victimization. Some without any nutrition. So all this has to be rectified by taking the correct measures, right? Similarly, the case with the mind. We all have a particular bent of mind, and that has to be corrected. That has those defects have to be rectified. And the master cultivator show you how to do that. The means and the methods to do this is given. So plowing the land, you ready the land, you deweed it, remove the boulders, make the land clean, keep the few good plants and trees that were there alive, nurture it, remove all other things gradually and ready the land. Now, the land is ready, the seeds have to be sown. If we again sow the same seeds of the weeds, useless stuff and poisonous plants, then in the next season we will again be sitting there and wondering what happened. So, we have to sow the seeds of useful crops which will bear golden harvest. And where do we find these seeds from? Those who have sown it in the far, far long seasons before, they have the seeds of wisdom with them, which they freely distribute, always available for those who seek. Take those seeds. Those are the seeds which need to be sown. So we should not allow the same weeds to grow, but plant different ones. This is, we should not get stuck with the old wrong kind of thinking, the wrong misconception, the misconceptions, the wrong ideas. These need to be removed and right ideas need to be replaced. Right ideas need to replace those wrong ideas. This is the process analogous to removing the weeds and getting the good seeds from those who have done this before and know that these are the seeds which are the best, which will yield the most useful fruits. So here comes the importance of acquiring the right ideas, acquiring the right philosophy of life, acquiring the right knowledge. See, our sense of what is right and what is wrong, distinguishing between what is a good plant and what is a poisonous plant, has been distorted. What is it that distorted it? It is our self-centeredness, misconception, the idea that we are this body, we are these senses, we are separate from each other, everyone else, and what needs to be done is to work for the comfort and the wealth and luxury of oneself. That misconception, this self-centeredness which comes from the idea that we are all separate from each other. So the philosophers say that body is the sepulcher, the prison of the soul. That is how they term the body. And Thomas Taylor, we are studying in I.C. Sanway, says, the soul indeed, till purified by philosophy, suffers death through its union with the body. The soul suffers through its union with the body. We think it's enjoyment. That is the inversion of vision that we have had due to this misconception that we are the body. So, what is necessary is the right philosophy of life. There is this Sufis saint again, don't remember her name. She says that I always wanted to see my beloved and always thought that there is a veil covering my beloved's face. But when I saw the beloved, I saw that there was actually no veil on the beloved's face. The veil was my eyelids. So, what is it that opens our eyes? It is this philosophy. What is it that opens our eyes to what is right, what is wrong? Acquire the discernment is the philosophy of life. So this is the surest, the best guide in life. The right philosophy of life, which is in analogy, consulting the master cultivators, learning the science of cultivation from them, knowing what are the good practices, knowing what should be avoided, and taking the seeds of wisdom from them. So what do we do? The soil is ready, the seeds are available. Next is to sow the seeds. This is the act of studying the philosophy, contemplation on it, meditation on it, making it a part of our life. You know, you see, the seed, it goes into the soil and grows out of it. Similarly, the seeds of wisdom should enter the mind and flower in our mind. And as Voice of the Silence says, the seeds of wisdom cannot sprout and grow in airless space. To live and reap experience, the mind needs breadth and depth and points to draw it towards the diamond soul. These breadth, depth and the points are what is given in the science of life, the philosophy of life. So that is what has to be first acquired. Study of the philosophy. It's contemplation, which will be analogous to replacing the weeds with the useful plants, useful seeds. Here, Marcus Aurelius gives a very nice description of our relations, how should be our relationship with the philosophy and how important it is. So this king is situated in a very, in a position which is, which seems to be position between two contraries. One is, he is a king, a ruler, a warrior, an emperor. He has to control the king, he has to, you know, manage the kingdom, ensure that there are nobody who is encroaching upon the kingdom, wage war. In the midst of all that, he has to be a stoic, a philosopher, equal-minded, calm, undisturbed, always centered upon his soul, which is the highest God, highest divinity. He says this while being in this position, like Janaka was, King Janaka was. He says, when circumstances force you to some sort of distress, quickly return to yourself. Do not stay out of rhythm for longer than you must. You will master the harmony the more by constantly going back to it. If you had a stepmother and a mother at the same time, you would pay attention to your stepmother, but nevertheless your constant recourse would be to your mother. That is how it is with the court and philosophy. So return to philosophy again and again and take your comfort in her. She will make the other life seem bearable to you, and you bearable in it. What a beautiful way of putting this idea of being engaged in all the duties of life, but internally always constantly going back again and again to the true philosophy of life. And in that perspective, doing all that you have to do. That said, once the seeds are sown, you have to nurture it. And nurturing it is a daily activity. Cultivation is a daily activity. You have to water the field. Similar to watering our minds with the experiences of life in the right perspective. Seeing all the events of life in the perspective of what is true and what is untrue. And holding on to what is true, letting go of what is not true. Holding on to self, letting go of the reflected self. Not only do you have to water the fields, you have to examine it. See that there are no other weeds which are growing again. No poisonous plants which are growing. No infestation of insects. No attack of insects. So daily examination of our life. Constantly being examining our life in the perspective of the paramitas of perfection. The seven paramitas that we saw. Those are the benchmarks. And we have to examine all our acts, thoughts and words in the perspective of that and see where we stand. That is similar to examination of the field every day and removal of defects, just like you remove the weeds. If you allow the weeds to grow, though you have sown the seeds of wisdom, if you simultaneously allow the weeds to grow, the weeds are very quick to proliferate. And they will quickly consume all the nutrition in the soil, and the grain or the useful crop will die. Similarly is our wrong habits and bias, prejudices and negative things of our mind. So that is why when Prahlada was given a wish by Narasimha after Hiranyakashipu was killed. Prahlada, as the only desire that I want is, let my mind constantly recourse to you. That is our real self. And Narasimha said, yeah, that is fine, but ask one more gift, you know, one more wish, one more boon that you want. So Prahlada thinks and says, Prahlada says his next gift is, his next wish is that I wish that I desire that no other desire should enter my mind. His desire is that no other desire should enter my mind. A very wise boon that he asked for. And not only do you examine it, you ensure that the sunlight is falling, there is no shade which is covering. Photosynthesis should happen for the plants to grow. Similarly, one should ensure that one's mind is not blocked from the spiritual sun. It's like the soil and the crop needs the sun, so the mind and the ideas to germinate needs the spiritual sun, which is constant aspiration towards the spiritual self, which is a part, integral part of yoga, which Sage Patanjali calls us Ishwara Pranidhana. Constantly, persistently, in our heart, aspire towards the oneself, of which we all are aspects. Now, if these are all the various things that have to be done, can you think, or wouldn't it be foolish to think, that you can ask somebody else, that is a master cultivator, who has achieved great perfection, to come and till your soil, plow your field and then sow the seeds? What will he say? He'll say, this is your field, you need to do it. I will show you how to do it. Thorough science, clearly marked process of initiation is there. First thing that is necessary is we need to do, prepare our soil and mind. And no other teacher or guru can lift us to the glorious heights of wisdom. We have to till the soil. We have to do the work, daily work. So, for example, you know, Al-Misri, the example that we took of the Sufi, and the aspirant who came and asked that I want nothing else apart from walking on the path of truth. What did Al-Masri say? He didn't say, come, I will take you and show you truth. He said, you have to do these two things. If you achieve it, you are walking on the path. Then you can follow our caravan. You can accompany in our caravan if you follow these two things. This is the hallmark of a true teacher who never asks anybody to place a reliance on himself, saying, I will do this for you. I will grant you this. He will always say, you have to do these things. Because that is the fundamentals of soul evolution, soul cultivation. The path is one for all. The means to reach the goal must vary with the pilgrimage. The teacher can but point the way. So all is being done, then we reap the harvest. If we have not been thorough in our work, diligent in our cultivation, then weeds have also grown, poisonous things have also grown, and in the next season when we reap the harvest, it will be a mixed bag. Mixture of some good and bad. But we come back in the next season and given the opportunity again and again so that we can deviate our mind, sow more and more of the golden seeds and reap more and more of harvests which are the spiritual harvest for the good of all. This cultivation is not a selfish harvest for oneself, but it is perfecting this science of cultivation and making our field so worthy that we become an example like the master cultivators and aid all others who are struggling to become master cultivators themselves. So this cultivation of soul is a development of divine virtues, which is actually one of the fundamental pillars of the Mohammedan religion. They call it Ihsan, which means doing beautiful acts. Or as the Sufis say, it is development of divine virtues. And Sufis say this is the cornerstone of Mohammedan religion. And the other two aspects or other two pillars being faith and submission, which is Iman and Islam. These actually are founded on development of divine virtues. And this is what the Sufis focus on. Whereas, though the jurisprudence focus on only Islam and the theologians focus only on Iman, that is faith, the Sufis say it is Ihsan or divine virtues which form the basis of the three pillars. This is the primary one. So these are the paramitas, these divine virtues are the paramitas which have to be cultivated in our daily life, as we see Marcus Aurelius say. All the knowledge that we need is in us. What we need to do is this cultivation so that the knowledge grows and becomes evident to our mind. When we say cultivation of the soul is inherently divine. It is the mind which needs to reflect the qualities, the characteristics of the soul. It is the mind which has become corrupt. It is the mind which needs to become capable of becoming of the same nature as the soul. So this is alchemy, transformation, transmutation, making the body, the brain and the mind porous to the divine influence which is already there within us. As the Sufi said, what is the veil which covers the face of the beloved? It is my own eyelids. When I opened it, I saw that there was no veil on the beloved. It was my eyes which were closed. So this Ihsan or divine virtues guided by the science of life is the primary primary aim. And we will stop here by considering what Marcus Aurelius says about how the five methods through which the soul harms itself. What are the five ways through which the soul harms itself? And therefore, those are the five things to be avoided. He says that, we will read that and we can take up any questions. He says, quote, "The soul of a man harms itself first and foremost when it becomes, as far as it can, a separate growth, a sort of tumor on the universe. Because to resent anything that happens is to separate oneself in revolt from nature, which holds in collective embrace the particular natures of all other things. Secondly, when it turns away from another human being, or is even carried so far in opposition as to intend him harm, such is the case of the souls of those gripped by anger. A soul harms itself, thirdly, when it gives in to pleasures and pain. Fourthly, whenever it dissimulates doing or saying anything feigned or false. Fifthly, whenever it fails to direct any of its own actions or impulses to a goal, but acts at random, without conscious attention, whereas even the most trivial action should be undertaken in reference to the end. And the end of all, the end for rational creatures is to follow the reason and the rule of that most venerable archetype of a governing state, the universe." So friends, let's stop here and we have 6 or 7 minutes, we can take up any questions.
So it also could be called the art of writing.
Art of, absolutely.
Why not have that as a topic next?
Sure.
Plato says in Timaeus that any art, Plato says in Timaeus, any art is beautiful if it has for its inspiration eternal, uncreated, eternal paradigm. That art which has for its model and inspiration a generated paradigm is always disruptive, disharmonious, and creates ugliness. So this goes with what you were
beautifully
trying to come.
This is another Sufi, a saint, I think Fatima of Nishapur, probably, mostly. She was asked by another Sufi person as to give me guidance for life, what should I do? She said only one sentence, in all your actions, ensure that you are sincere and protect yourself from your lower self, nafas, the lower self. And sincerity also, of course, one is the general understanding of sincerity. Another one is the deeper meaning about sincerity, which is sincerity of purpose for which we are here. If we do anything deviant from the purpose for which we are here, in that sense we are insincere. We're deviant, deviating from what is the purpose for which we are here, and the purpose for which this field and all the soil, the nutrition, sunlight, the waters have been provided to us by nature, which is the body, the mind, the senses, the faculties. So if it is misused, then we are insincere. It is like the soil is given for you for cultivation, and the master has sent you so that you can bring harvest, and then you rent out the place and make money out of it. And go empty handed or even destroy the soil.
Master has given his eyes, everything he has given, nothing of me.
And that master is yourself again, there is no, it's one's own real self. This incarnation is, that mind is an efflux from the divine mind, which is ourself. And this brain mind is actually the servant, one who is supposed to work, toil every day and bring the harvest at the end of the life. So the analogy is beautiful, cultivation of the soul, beautiful analogy.